You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, October 3rd, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's me talking about day three of the government shutdown. How long will this last? Where will it go? And just how much more screwing will the American people take before this is over? Also on the program today, Obamacare. Now also day three. Stories starting to come in around the country of people getting surprised at what they're saving and then reacting like you would imagine if they were Republican. Also on the program today, fear not, ladies and gentlemen, the NSA is going to hire a civil rights ombudsperson just to make sure that your civil rights are protected. We've got some other stories as well. A little housekeeping. I'm exhausted. Nikki has been out of town. The nation's national nightmare ends, is ongoing. But my own personal nightmare has ended today. I have been up for the better part of the last 72 hours, feeding Saul at different times through the night, and not fun. I like to think that it's much easier for my wife because she can just breastfeed and I've got to do the bottle, but the reality is that it's just easier for me when she's here. And the metaphor here is, of course, it's very much sort of like the Republican mentality. I sleep on the couch. I block out what's going on in my bedroom with my son and my wife, as he is only 6 months old and sleeping maybe 3 or 4 hours at a click. And I go on with my life. Not unlike the Republicans, who don't seem to care about what's going on until it has some political or pecuniary impact on them. Yes, I took yesterday as an opportunity to learn words that I should have learned for the SATs. So we will talk about this today. We'll take your phone calls at 646-257-3920. We'll also take your IMs. I got good news. You'll have noticed it if you've been to the majority.fm website, but I think we're not going to launch this thing officially until tomorrow, but it is available now. We have a new sponsor for the next couple of months, ladies and gentlemen, or I should say a returning sponsor. And I am talking about Credo, the phone company, and Credo Action, the political outfit. They are you know, we'll talk more about this as we go on, but Credo is now offering listeners of this program 25% off your monthly data plan for 2 years, which means if you get one of their Android-based phones, like a Samsung S3 or an HTC One, I think it is, your data plan will be extremely cheap, and you can use your data plan to use the Majority Report app. Also, if you're in a contract now and you don't want to incur the costs of switching to Credo, they'll give you a buyout credit of up to $350. I think that's bigger than the last one that they gave us.
I think so. Yeah.
So, folks, head to majority.fm. You'll see the banners down at the bottom of the page or midway through the page. Click on it. And there's a code you use, 501-326. 501-326. It's on there, that landing page that they have built especially for the Majority Report. And you can get Credo. As the weeks go on, and on a semi-regular basis, I'll remind you why you may want to sign up with Credo.
Also, what a great opportunity for our listeners who don't have a smartphone but would like to get one so they could use the new Majority Report
app. It's worth getting a smartphone just for the app. Because you can listen live, you can either download or just stream. If you're a freebie user, 25 of the past shows. If you're a member, like 200 of the past shows. And also, you're supporting a great political organization, which we will talk about as the weeks go by. So head over to majority.fm. You'll see the ads there, and you can click on it. Should take you to a fully functional, Sam Cedarized Majority Report Credo site. All right, let's get into this. I want to start. Understand now that within the 3 days that have passed, the Republicans are scrambling, which is not to say, and understand that you can also have two opinions that aren't necessarily mutually exclusive about how this is going to play out and how the Democrats have handled it so far. One is the Republicans are beyond irresponsible. There really is no word in English to describe what's going on with the Republican Party. The cravenness, the extremism, it almost heads off of a political spectrum, but it is at its heart. Conservatism hates government. And why do they hate government? Well, we spoke to Martin Gillins the other day. And one of his books describes, I think, exactly why these Republicans hate government in their hatred for welfare. And that is because there is a certain percentage of the Republican Party. I don't know what the percentage is. Maybe it's just 30%. Maybe it's 50%. Who resent the fact that people other than themselves, and yes, other than themselves, they have no problem if they themselves are direct recipients, or people who are like them are direct recipients of the help that a government gives its people. But they resent the fact that there are other people, and maybe in their minds they also presume that these other people get a lot more help. And they get it for all the wrong reasons. But those other people are people who are not white. Now, the other percentage of Republicans, why they hate government, is because they don't like to be taxed. And so they don't even like those white people getting any benefits. They don't care. They just care about they themselves, period. And it's really, they don't want to pay the tax. Because they've been fortunate enough, to have success, and they just want, it's just a basically a strategy to protect their own luck or inheritance, as it were. Their attitude is, I'm not racist. I want everybody to starve who's not been fortunate enough as I have been. That's basically what we're talking about. This, at its heart, is a battle between two different fundamental ideologies. And that is, one ideology says that government is bad because all it does is take from me and I'm going to ignore all the benefits I get from it. And the other ideology says government can be helpful. In fact, that's why we gather together in a society, to help the least amongst the least fortunate amongst us, to help people who have bad luck, to help people to ensure that they, at the end of their lives, can have a lead a life like of dignity, and so that government can that society can function and do the services that provide benefit to the most amount of people, and that continue its strength as a society. That's what we're seeing here. Everything else is petty politics at the end of the day. Sadly, it is petty politics that is driving this. Yesterday on CNN, I think it was The Lead, was the show. They had this California congressman, Devin Nunes. I don't know anything about him. I would bet that Obama took his district. That's the first thing that comes to mind. We'll look that up. I think he's in the 24th district of California. That's just a bet. And I say that completely blind because the guy is sounding somewhat reasonable. Although when you start to scratch the surface, you realize there is no reason in the Republican caucus. There's just, you know, some level of shame, but it is really, it's not huge. All right, so this is David Nunes on the CNN's The Lead. There's a couple of people on there. I think it's Jake Tapper and Gloria Borgia. Listen to this guy explain what's going on in the House now and understand something. The reason why we do not have a budget, the reason why the government has shut down, it's not because there are so many Republicans who would vote against a continuing resolution. It is because John Boehner has decided his speakership is the most important thing at play here. If he brought a bill to the floor, which he could do, that said, we're going to continue to fund the government at its current levels, which, as you will note, because of the sequester, are far closer to the levels that Paul Ryan was crying about in his budget than anything else that's been offered over the past 2 or 3 years by anybody. If he brought this continuing resolution to the floor, it would pass easily with the entire Democratic caucus voting for it, and at least 17 Republicans voting for it. We know this. No one contends otherwise. You need to know that when you hear this clip. Here's Congressman Devin Nunes. He calls his Republican colleagues nutsos, and then he says, and incidentally, I have the spine of a jellyfish.
Congressman Nunes, I want to start with you. Obviously, you're not a supporter of Obamacare in particular, but why would you call your fellow Republicans lemmings with suicide vests? What's the issue here?
Well, thank you for having me on. A few months ago, back in my district and in Washington, I started hearing this strategy that was laid out that shut down the government, don't fund Obamacare, and don't stop until Obamacare is ended. And I thought from the beginning that that was really couldn't be done. And it's really just a matter of math,
right?
Because
you don't have the Senate and you don't have the White House.
Right. And you would need technically, and it's not even, you know, what some of my constituents were saying, well, we only need five senators. Well, as the folks here in Washington know, you need 60 votes just to end debate, and it took 60 votes to implement Obamacare. And I just don't think, as long as there's a guy named Obama in the White House, that you're going to get rid of Obamacare without a veto. So assuming that you got the 60 votes, assuming President Obama vetoed the bill, which he would, you then need 67 votes in the United States Senate and 290 votes in the House. So it's just a matter of math. It was a silly strategy from the beginning. And, you know, this whole lemming issue came up because one of my colleagues, who I was having a direct conversation with, decided to leak it outside of the room. And so I walked out and they asked me about it. So that's how I got out public.
But you said it, right? I mean, lemmings.
You think it's bad for the Republican Party?
Yeah, well, it's crazy. I don't understand the whole point, the whole strategy. Most Americans don't understand it. But look, I have supported it. I will support our leadership because part of this problem in this whole group that I referred
I don't understand why we're doing this. It doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely ridiculous. We're all lemmings. We're all lemmings with suicide vests. We're lemmings. What we're doing is ridiculous. Just go back a couple of seconds. And now he's going to explain to you why he is lemming along with the rest of them.
But look, I have supported it. I will support our leadership because part of this problem in this whole group that I refer to, this has been ongoing for 3 years, where they've continued to block our leadership for 3 years to get 218 votes.
The Lemming Caucus, you're talking about Tea Party Caucus.
Well, it's not Tea Party Caucus, no. Not at all. It's a Lemming Caucus. It's guys who meet privately. They're always conspiring. It's mostly just about power. And it's just gotten us nowhere.
But if,
Why he's saying this, he's saying this is just about the real problem here is not that I disagree with the Tea Party or it's that there are people who are not listening to the leadership. And I'm not going to not listen to the leadership who is going along with this strategy because then I'll be part of the problem too. What? On one hand, he's saying that Bonaire is being held hostage. On the other hand, he's saying, I'm not going to buck his being held hostage because then I would be like a hostage taker. This guy is tying himself up in knots here. Continue.
And it's just gotten us nowhere.
But if that's the case, and if they're lemmings, and if you actually understand simple math, that you can't get this done, then why not be more aggressive? I mean, I know that there's sort of a growing number of people like you who want to have a pass a clean bill to fund the government and just move on.
A clear majority of the Republican Party in the House, right?
It seems that way. So why not put your vote where your mouth is?
Well, because first of all, you have to vote on what's in front of you.
But why not get so John Boehner can put whatever he wants in front of you.
So if you want to do that and start bringing down rules, basically, is what you're talking about. You're talking about doing the same thing that got us in this mess in the first place. The leadership made a position.
He's saying the same thing that got us in this place in the first place was people bucking the leadership. So I'm not going to buck the leadership, even though what it's doing is so bad that I'm coming on TV to distance myself from it. But party discipline, uber alles. And even if it's party discipline that leads us all over the edge of a cliff, this guy's so full of crap, it's unbelievable. Taking zero responsibility for what's going on there. Zero. None. Zero. And these people around him on CNN are talking to him and asking questions as if he's a reasonable human being. Continue. How much time we got on this? That's it. That's all it is there. And this is what passes for, you know, some show of courage in the Republican caucus, right? This guy's being hailed as somebody who's sensible. Well, I'm not going to buck the leadership now because that type of, and breaking rules, you know what rule he's talking about breaking? The Hastert rule. You know what the Hastert rule is? Not a rule. That's something that somebody made up and just said, hey, here's a rule. That rule is we're not going to put anything to the floor unless every Republican wants it on the floor. That's a made up rule. That's just, there's no rule there. It's just, this is the way that we're going to ask it. And Speaker Denny Hastert, who the rule supposedly is named after, he says it never existed. It's not a rule. It's a habit. So we have around the country now 800,000 workers who have been furloughed, kicked out of their jobs. They will probably never see back pay. We have 1.3 million people who are now working without pay. They may or may not see back pay. It is ridiculous. Want to take this call? All right. Who is it?
A former libertarian candidate from president for president. Bill Still from North Carolina. Here you go.
It's a real call. Bill from North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Oh, well, thank you very much. One of your listeners told me that I should call in and join in with the discussion, and I'm happy to do that. I was not actually the Libertarian nominee. I was a candidate for the Libertarian nomination in the last cycle.
Sorry to hear you lost.
So what's going on with the economy these days?
Well, let me ask your perspective on this government shutdown. I mean, this will be an interesting opportunity. I was going to just pontificate about it, but I'm curious. What is your perspective on this?
I'm kind of in a monetary reform position to where this really doesn't make any difference to me one way or another. Even if it had a serious negative impact on the markets, that just doesn't concern me. What does concern me are two things. Number one, governments should not be allowed to borrow money at all. That would solve the overspending problem. This is a basic defect in the Constitution. It was what Thomas Jefferson, the only thing Thomas Jefferson complained about the Constitution was it enabled the federal government to borrow money. That should not be the case. We need to fix that by a constitutional amendment. Secondly, most of our money at this point is not created by the government. In fact, in the United States, only 3% of the money, literally the coins in your pocket, are created by the government. 97% of all money is created by commercial banks in the form of loans. This is called fractional reserve lending. So the problem is basically twofold. Number one, we have to forbid government borrowing. Number two, we have to forbid the capability of banks to counterfeit American money through fractional reserve lending.
All right. Well, hold on for a second.
Let me
stop you there. I'll put that. I mean, I've written down the two problems that we have now: that our government can borrow money, because that was a problem with the Constitution, and that private banks create money. They print it. It's a fiat. You have a problem with the notion of a fiat currency. What is the point of our society? I mean, when you say you don't care about the government shutdown, I mean, do you mean that you don't care about the people who are not getting services? You don't care about the women, the infants who are not getting food care? You don't care about National Guard furloughs around the country? You don't care about it doesn't mean anything to you? I mean, you don't literally mean I don't care.
No, I don't literally mean I don't care. I mean, we all know that this is going to come to an end fairly soon, and the results of this government shutdown will come to an end, and it'll do absolutely nothing to solve the root problem.
Well, but wait a second. But I mean, I want to be explicit about this. I just want to get on the same page, okay? Because, you know, like, I'm looking at a story here. There's one I think this is in the officials at the Crater of the Moon National Monument in Idaho. They've had to stop looking for a missing woman because they don't have federal employees to go out and look for it, because federal employees are disallowed by law to work during a government shutdown, for instance. Or when I'm looking at these furloughs, or when I'm looking at these stories of kids who are losing Head Start, when I'm looking at food assistance, I mean, what is your position on that? Because I understand what you're talking about in terms of borrow money, and you don't like the money creation. I'm not sure exactly I understand what the problems are, but I get what you're saying. But I'm curious as to why you think we are a society. I mean, what is the value of us organizing as a society?
Oh, that's a great question. And really, that's been kind of the touchstone of human history for the last 1,000 years. It's how we, the little people, all put a little bit of our time and energy and money into this thing called government. And why do we do that? Because there's really no other way that we can effectively create freedom for ourselves. And what is freedom? That's effectively being able to get around the major moneyed powers that you really can't say it in any other way other than the banking powers. And so we formed this thing called self-governance. And, you know, self-governance by definition should operate in the public interest, in the interest of we the people, not the way it's doing right now, in the interest of the 1%. And so I think maybe that's what you're trying to get to.
Well, no, I get to that. I mean, I get that point. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, we're talking about non-1%ers who are having their services shut down. And you have a problem. Do you have a problem with things like food stamps? Do you have a problem with things like expanded Medicaid under, let's say, Obamacare? Or you have no problem with that because that doesn't go to the 1%?
I don't understand the thrust of your question. I mean, I'm going at what the root of the basic problem is, and the shutdown is going to do absolutely nothing for that.
So you're saying the basic problem is what? That government, that I don't understand. I mean, put aside for a moment the fact that we borrow money. Why is that a problem, that the government borrows money?
Well, it's a twofold problem. Number one, do you know how much we're paying in interest on the national debt right now?
Yeah, I think somewhere around 60 cents on a dollar.
No. We're paying about this fiscal year about $450 billion just on interest to service the national debt.
Right, right.
And that's at
60
the current
cents on the dollar.
Low interest rates.
Yes, 60 cents on the dollar. Okay, so we're paying $450 billion on the debt. And?
Okay, well, I don't understand the 60 cents on the dollar thing. I mean, we're in a $17 trillion economy.
Every dollar that we spend, we're spending 60 cents on the interest.
Well, that's not true. I mean,
what's the problem with that interest payments?
It's a lot of money. It basically equals the entire discretionary budget of the U.S. Congress, and plus the fact that it's a payment that is entirely unnecessary. We don't have to create our money as debt. So there's just a simple fiscal problem with spending that much money, which is essentially we're just giving it to banks. We're renting our money into existence. But there's an even more important problem.
Well, a lot of that money we borrowed from ourselves, but that's okay. You understand that, right?
A lot of it we borrow from ourselves, but the majority of it is borrowed like everybody else borrows. Over 50% is borrowed from banks or other financial institutions at interest. But the problem is even more subtle and basic, and that is, the old proverb that the borrower becomes servant to the lender, and that's really true. You know, when
maybe we need to have this conversation on another day because we're talking across each other here. You're saying it's problematic that we're spending too much money on the debt and in terms of interest. And I would say yes, it's rather inefficient. We shouldn't be spending this much on interest at this point. What are the real world implications of it? I understand. I don't like the idea of bankers getting money. I think that the financial services industry is largely just about rent seeking. But at the end of the day, I mean, what we should be doing right now, if we want to juice the economy, if we want the economy to work for more people, is we actually need to borrow more money. We need to spend more of it.
Well, you just said two different things. But spending money does not necessarily mean that we have to borrow it.
Well, I mean, in terms of like modern monetary theory and the idea that we could just mint a coin, let's say, and pay off our debt, I don't have a problem with that either, frankly.
Modern monetary theory? Oh, you mean the gangster theory that's in control of Wall Street right now, sucking the life out of not only the American economy, but every economy on the face of this earth?
No, that's not what I mean. All right, listen, maybe we should table this for today so that I can go on and talk about something that I think I feel like this is wasting people's time. Let's do this again another day, and we should contact each other with email so that we're on the same page as to what we're talking about.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, appreciate the call. For the life of me, I just didn't feel like there was any substance in what we were talking about there.
You really felt like with a libertarian talking about monetary policy, there wasn't much substance?
I'm sorry, folks. I apologize. All right, let's get to real world, okay? It's nice to have theories about how Thomas Jefferson said this and the Constitution is wrong about that and we're enriching a worldwide banking cabal and we don't have genuine freedom because bankers. That's all well and good. One of the things that happened this past week when the exchanges officially opened is we had a better sense and a clearer sense of the numbers involved in the Medicaid expansion. The biggest component of Obamacare, really there's two big components. One is of the Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to call it. One is the expansion of Medicaid. Essentially saying to 25, 30 million people who are too poor to buy insurance that you are now eligible for Medicaid. The other is a series of regulations on insurance companies basically saying you can no longer offer crappy products. Let's focus for a moment on the Medicaid expansion. This part of the law was essentially struck down by the Supreme Court. In other words, states now have the right to opt into this expansion of Medicaid under a very strange theory that somehow they were being coerced into doing it, or that it would be coercive, because if they didn't accept the expansion of Medicaid, they wouldn't be able to get the original Medicaid. So under the Supreme Court's theory, if the original Medicaid had covered everybody up to 133% of poverty and a state didn't want it, that would have been fine and they would have gotten no Medicaid. But because this was amended after the existence of Medicaid, somehow that was coercive. If that doesn't make any sense to you, then you're like most people and most in the legal profession who are completely shocked by this ruling. The implications of this are that many states rejected the expansion of Medicaid, and they are virtually all, or those who have definitively rejected it, Republican-led states. New York Times reports today 2/3 of poor blacks and single mothers and more than half of the low-wage workers who do not have insurance in this country will be ineligible for health insurance because of these Republican-controlled states that have refused to accept the expansion of Medicaid. There are 8 million Americans who are impoverished, uninsured, and ineligible for help. The federal government will pay for the expansion of this Medicaid completely, 100% for the first 2 years, and at a figure of no less than 90% going forward into the future. So we're talking about 2 years out, states would have to pay no more than 10% of the costs of providing insurance, health insurance, to people living between 100% and 133% of poverty. And these people cannot get covered because, as it was written, the Affordable Care Act does not provide subsidies for people who are living 133% below the poverty line. Because there was an assumption that Medicaid would cover them. So if you're living at 140% of the poverty line, you can go into the exchanges and you can get subsidies. If you're living at 399% above the poverty line, you can go into the exchanges and get subsidies. You can also go into the exchanges if you're living above 400%, but you will not get subsidies. But generally, the price of insurance will be lower in most states and for most people. For some people, it would be higher. They tell the story of an unemployed healthcare worker in Virginia. She wouldn't identify herself because she doesn't want potential employees to know that she's down on her luck. She's 55 years old. She has high blood pressure. She's been waiting for the law to take effect so she could get coverage. She made a fatal mistake, however, because before she lost her job and her house, she had to move in with her brother in Virginia, moving from Maryland. Maryland has expanded Medicaid. Virginia has not. Would I consider moving back there? It might involve me living in my car. I don't know. I might consider it. There are 26 states that have rejected the Medicaid expansion. They are home to half the country's population, but 68% of the poor. Of poor, uninsured blacks and single mothers. About 60% of the country's uninsured working poor are in those states. Among those who are excluded are about 435,000 cashiers, 341,000 cooks, 253 nurses' aides. Now, the question I would love a libertarian or any conservative to call in and tell me is, why should we not provide health insurance for these people? Why shouldn't we? What is the value of a society if we can let millions of people live in abject poverty and not even provide health care for them? What is the point of society if we can have hundreds of thousands of people working and they cannot afford health care? Is that the answer? Is it freedom? Because that's what Thomas Jefferson would have wanted? You have millions of people who have been left out of this expansion because of Republican governors. New Hampshire, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee still might decide to expand Medicaid coverage before the coverage takes effect in January. It would obviously affect the numbers I just said. Here's a story of Willie Charles Carter, an unemployed 53-year-old whose most recent job was a maintenance worker at a public school. He's had problems with his legs since surgery last year. His income is below Mississippi's ceiling for Medicaid, which is about $3,000 a year. But he has no... I'm going to repeat that. Mississippi's ceiling for Medicaid right now is $3,000 a year. But he has no dependent children, so he does not qualify. His income is too low to make him eligible for subsidies on the federal health exchange. You got to be almost dead before you can get Medicaid in Mississippi, he said. He does not know what he'll do when the clinic where he goes for medical care, the Good Samaritan Health Center in Greenville, closes next month because of lack of funding. I'm scared all the time, he said. I just walk around here with faith in God to take care of me. I guess that's what's called, that's what freedom is.
And faith.
For adults with children, the median income limit for Medicaid is just under half the federal poverty level, $5,600 a year for an individual. In states that are expanding, it's above the poverty line or at about $12,200, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. In all, 6 out of 10 blacks live in the states not expanding Medicaid. In Mississippi, 56% of all poor and uninsured adults are black, even though they account for just 38% of the population. You remember Martin Gillen's book on why we hate welfare? There was no problem with welfare in the American public's consciousness until the Civil Rights Act of 1965. When racial animus became the driving electoral force for the Republican Party. And guys like Ronald Reagan and Rush Limbaugh started talking about welfare queens and pimps and the urban cities. Claretha Briscoe earns just under $11,000 a year making fried chicken and other fast food at a convenience store in Hollandale, Mississippi, too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to get subsidies on the new health exchange. She had a heart attack in 2002 that a local hospital treated as part of its charity care program, which you should know, the cost of which was certainly passed on to everybody else who went to that hospital. The cost of which was passed on to the government. So we paid for that treatment. We just didn't pay Medicaid rates. I skipped months on my blood pressure pills, she says. She visited the Good Samaritan Health Center last week because she was having chest pains. I buy them when I can afford them. That Samaritan Center will be shut down. She's 48. Gladys Abrilla, a housekeeper in Houston who earns $17,000 a year and supports two children, is under the poverty line and therefore not eligible for new subsidies. But she makes too much to qualify for Medicaid under the state's rules. States can set up their own rules. The 133% was supposed to be a catch-all for anybody whose states were not providing health insurance under Medicaid. She recently spent 36 hours waiting in the emergency room for a searing pain in her back. We came to this country, we are legal, and we work really hard, says Ms. Arbila, 45. She immigrated to the United States 12 years ago. Her son is a soldier in Afghanistan. Why don't we have the same opportunities as others? Why? Because of freedom. Because it's like sugar. It's going to create a certain dependence in you. Meanwhile, the ongoing shutdown hurts poor people even more. Head Start programs that offer preschool activities for 3,200 children in Florida, Connecticut, Alabama, Mississippi have closed. 11 other programs are going to be shut by the end of this week. Twenty-three programs serving almost 19,000 children were to be funded on October 1st. Those are the centers that have closed or are in immediate jeopardy. So you're going to have 20,000 kids who are going to have nowhere to go during the mornings. Presumably their parents are working at low-wage jobs. They're going to have to find daycare. They're going to have to pay for it. That's going to drop them deeper into poverty. They may or may not be eligible for Medicare in their states. This is just a huge disaster. The Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC, provides vouchers for infant formula and food to low-income families with young children. Programs that received their funding earlier in the year will be okay for a while. Others are going to have no program, no funding. In Utah, most WIC clinics closed this week. TANF, No new TAMF money. That's temporary assistance for needy families. Some states will be able to use money already in their accounts. Some states will not. In Arizona, the state stopped sending benefit checks to new or renewing families on Wednesday. 5,100 families lost assistance, which averages $207 a month. Meals on Wheels closing more of its programs. But, you know, the real important issue right now is that the government is borrowing money.
It's just a slim down, Sam. Just a slim down. That's what Fox News was calling it.
Boston Globe reports Cape Cod man's last chance for treatment for cancer has been postponed by the government shutdown because new clinical trials cannot begin until they're registered on a federal website, which has been forced to stop processing applications. He's a 48-year-old father of three. Now unlikely to receive experimental drug for his metastatic bile duct cancer next month, as he expected.
There were so many things in that list, I can't remember if you said it, but there's 30 kids with cancer who are also part of that program who can't receive the treatment.
That's a different program. That's the NIH.
Program. That's
the
NIH program.
Ah, okay.
And all these people should have taken responsibility.
That's an NIH program in Washington, D.C. National Institutes of Health, which has already been subject to a lot of sequester cuts. Nearly three-quarters of the staff was furloughed. Director Francis Collins said about 200 patients who otherwise would be admitted to the NIH Clinical Center into clinical trials each week will be turned away. This includes about 30 children, most of them cancer patients. And this is what we're hearing out of the Republicans. They see that story in the paper and they say, let's pass a bill just to fund for those 200 people. And then they try and claim at a press conference that Harry Reid says, who cares about them? And they do so by omitting a line that came before Harry Reid said this.
Not even just that, though. Out of all these things that are closed down, that whole list you read, what's the one thing you're hearing them talk about?
Here's the plan for the Republicans to fund the government. Whatever makes it into the paper and gets picked up by more than one media outlet, that's what we'll fund.
The World War II Memorial.
Whatever provides us with any type of political problems, that's what we'll fund. In general, poor people, we're not terribly concerned. As long as we get we remove the sequester on the FAA, wealthy people and media people who travel in planes have the ability to get on a plane the proper amount of time, we're okay. But if something comes up, that's what we'll fund. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And they are now rolling this in to the debt ceiling negotiations. This is where we're headed. I suggested as much the other day. I think we're going to be in a government shutdown for two more weeks, ladies and gentlemen. Or leading up to it. We're going to go long today. Maybe we'll cut out part of that exchange because it was useless. We'll put it at the end of the show or something. We'll bring it to the end of the show because that just ate up time and was not really helpful for anything. So we have all this going down, and now the next question is going to be, how is this going to get resolved? You've got Republicans going around now. Whenever there's some type of public relations problem for them, they'll show up. Here is a clip which describes Randy Neuberger yelling at a Park Service ranger over this whole World War II memorial. Apparently, there was some vets who were en route to on a bus to come to the World War II memorial. When they got there, it was shut down because park rangers can't keep people from defacing it, essentially, or protect it in any way because they have been furloughed. They don't have the staff to maintain these things. It's part of the government shutdown.
It's amazing how they don't understand that there is a staff involved with that. All these Fox News right-wing pundits online, they've been saying how Obama's shutting these down. They don't even need a staff. These things are open to the public all the time. There's no staff
there. It's a joke.
It's a joke.
And the vets went in there anyways. And you've got the Republicans trying to make hay of it. Here's Randy Neuberger with the audacity of going up to a park ranger who is statutorily not allowed to deviate from the fact that it's closed down. And you'll listen to what this exchange.
While there was no confrontation between park police and the veterans, there were some tense moments between different groups who came to the World War II Memorial today.
It's about vets, and you guys are parasites.
The Park Service decided to allow the vets in, saying what they were doing was expressing their First Amendment rights, but the rest of the public had to stay out. That's what led Texas Congressman Randy Neugebauer to lash out at a park ranger.
And how do you look at them and say, how do you... to deny them access?
Well, it should be difficult.
It is difficult. I'm sorry, sir.
Park Service should be ashamed of themselves.
And then this furloughed federal worker let the congressman know who he thought was to blame.
This woman is doing her job just like me. I'm a 30-year federal veteran. I'm out of work.
Well, the reason you are is Mr. Reed is...
No, it's because the government won't do its job and pass a budget.
We caught up with both men after the confrontation.
She can use some discretion. But obviously, it's very disappointing.
I saw a federal employee who was there following orders, doing their job. They're not responsible for the closing of this. That gentleman is.
He's right. But part of Congress has been doing their job, and part of Congress has not been doing their job.
And that wasn't the only confrontation here today.
All right, let's wait. Let's just answer Randy Neuberger's. I'm not going to respond to Randy Neuberger. Let's let Representative Greg Walden, Republican from Oregon, who is the chair of the National Republican Congressional Committee. Listen, Walden said, according to several people present, we have to do this, speaking of the shutdown, because of the Tea Party. If we don't, these guys are going to get primaried and they're going to lose their primary. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It was just amazing to hear him say to this park ranger, it's your fault. Like, what?
There's just a complete lack of humanity and shame with these people. Horrible. All right, let's talk about where this is going to go. I've mentioned this a little bit over the past couple of days, but I do think it's a big problem. The Republicans now... We're starting to hear them say that this is not about Obamacare anymore. This is about winning. Michael Grimm, Republican from New York, says it's not about Obamacare anymore. We're not going to be disrespected, says conservative Rhett Marlin Stutzman from Indiana. We have to get something out of this. I don't know what that even is.
Read that quote again. Read that whole quote.
Listen to what this guy says. We're not going to be disrespected. This is now about respect for the Republican caucus. We have to get something out of this. And I don't know what that even is. In other words, why are we doing this? I don't know. But you better come up with something that will make us stop, because I have to go home and prove that this was worthwhile. Being reported in the Washington Examiner, as well as that quote, House Republican leaders will drive their rank and file particularly hard to support a debt ceiling proposal that includes provisions on tax and entitlement reform and to other GOP priorities. So this is where the House leadership is going, to a grand bargain. I'm going to read that quote again, folks. I think I said this on the Better Half the other day. For President Obama, his number one agenda in this is to not have the legacy of the one who empowered the Republicans to use the debt ceiling time and time again as a means of extortion. His legacy is not tied up in, I wouldn't negotiate. He takes that position because that is a tactic. his agenda, one of the pieces on his sort of bucket list for a legacy is to make sure that this dynamic does not happen again. The other thing on his bucket list, which we have said time and time again, is to have entitlement reform, to cut Social Security, to cut Medicare. It's in his budget this year. They were talking about this in 2009 before the inauguration. They were talking about it last week when they sent out their chief advisor out onto CNN. Entitlement reform, grand bargain. And this is what we're starting to hear. Politico. Government shutdown is a grand bargain, the only way out. Many pragmatic House Republicans have come to a simple conclusion. The best chance to fund the government, raise the debt ceiling, and extract any concession from President Obama is to strike a big budget deal. Yes, the grand bargain is back. It's the only common thread these days that runs from House Republican leadership down through the rank and file. Privately, a healthy number of pragmatic Republicans understand that Obamacare is not going to be defunded or even touched in the debt ceiling in the government funding negotiations. At this point, the strong stand against funding government is more about standing firm against Democrats than actually stripping money from Obamacare. They're on a jihad, ladies and gentlemen. And President Obama's response on Wednesday on CNBC. The message I have for the leaders is very simple. As soon as we get a clean piece of legislation that reopens the government, and there is a majority for that right now in the House of Representatives, until we get that done, until we make sure Congress allows Treasury to pay for things that Congress has already authorized, that being the debt ceiling, we're not going to engage in a series of negotiations. However, he said then he is open to negotiating on things like entitlement reform. He said on Wednesday that the extra money in terms of revenue, remember, this has been the thing that has prevented a grand bargain in the past. Democrats insisting on new taxes, not just new revenue, new taxes. On Wednesday, he said extra money could be raised by closing tax loopholes, not raising income taxes. In other words, I'm down for just saying that we got new revenues by closing loopholes. Loopholes are a joke, folks. The day closing tax loopholes, any statutory language is signed to close tax loopholes, is the day before those loopholes start to get unwound. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the better half. When we do, we will we'll do a random rush. I got a couple other stories here. Story about a lifelong Republican came to love Obamacare after realizing it will save him $13,000. And wait till you see what it has done to his entire political perspective. All right, folks, 646-257-3920. The IM is on right now. You can support this show by becoming a member today at Majority FM. You can support this show by switching to Credo. Click on the link, see what they got. You can support the show by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. One-off donation on the app. We got to take a break. We'll be back in a sec. We'll take your phone call straight up. We'll be right back.